It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. Wow, what a gorgeous day. You see that bright snow and spring sunshine out there and you want to get on skis. And you know, skiing is one of those things that the better you get at it, the more fun it is. And it's also true that the younger you learn it, the better you get at it. Kind of like learning a language. It's easy when you're an indestructible kid. But boy, it isn't easy to teach kids to ski, at least not in my experience. It takes a lot of patience. And there's some real know-how involved to make it pleasant for you and pleasant for your kid. So that's our topic today, teaching kids how to downhill ski. And then we're also going to get into the broader topic of teaching your kids how to do all kinds of outdoor activities, how to, you know, kayak, and how to be a good parent when you're working with your kids and getting them to enjoy the outdoors. And I've got two guests with me right now. We'll have more on later as well. Erin Kirkland is in the studio. She's a freelance writer, a broadcaster, and she's a publisher of the akonthego.com website, which focuses on family travel in Alaska. Erin, thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks, Charles. Great to be here.
And a mom, too, and a former ski instructor.
That's right. Yeah, the whole package.
Yeah. And on the phone from Faraway Girdwood, we have Garth McPhee, who's the Mountain Learning Center director at Alyeska Resort, and is what you call a professional teaching kids to ski and managing that whole program every day. Thanks for being with us, Garth.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And we'd love to hear your comments, questions, and memories. This is the kind of thing where parents can help one another. Learning how to teach is a big lesson to learn, as any parent knows. If you want to get on the air with us, the number here in Anchorage is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And you can reach us online at Outdoor Explorer on Facebook. Just go to Facebook, type in Outdoor Explorer, and the comments you put there will be able to be read by the other listeners, and then I'll get them in the studio, and I'll ask our guests. So so join us. So, Erin, you have taught kids to ski.
Mm-hmm.
I've taught my four kids to ski, and I have to say it's not easy, and it's not because it's physically difficult, but you have to get over a certain level of impatience, frustration, getting into that kid.
Yes, and sir.
They like nothing more than just tumble around on the ground.
Well, yeah, you know, and I think, Charles, when you're teaching your kids any new skill, you learn a lot about where you, as the adult in the situation, where your patience level is, where your skill set lies, and I think it's really critical that you know when to kind of let somebody else take over. You know, my dad taught all of us to ski, so a lot of interesting stories about that. But, you know, I found myself clashing with him more over, "Dad, you're yelling at me," when he was just simply trying to give me the information. And, you know, I found myself really with my two boys having to stop a lot. And because I had taught skiing first before kids, so mm-hmm. I knew technically what I needed to teach them both. But, you know, you have that added, you know, I'm with you every day and I know where your patience level lies. So it was very challenging.
Well, with all of these things we're going to talk about, I think it's keeping it fun,
yes,
right? If it's
absolutely
not fun, the kid's not going to want to do it anymore. But at the same time, keeping it structured enough so that they actually progress and learn.
Absolutely. And I think when you are, again, teaching any new skill to kids, you have to know where that balance lies. When to take a break, and especially with skiing, let's just go ski some trails, or let's go find the fun little jumps, or let's play tag, or let's do, you know, some of these other activities. But, and I'm sure Garth can speak to this, where you have to know a certain technique for safety, and the rules of the road kind of stuff.
Yeah, let's turn to Garth. Garth McPhee directs the Mountain Learning Center down at Alyeska, where any day of the week you can walk in and get skiing lessons. Garth, you have different challenges in teaching kids than a parent does. I mean, you guys are pros. And I imagine when you are starting with some kids who've never been on skis, there's a little bit of a fear factor you have to deal with. How do you get them comfortable?
Well, that's a good question. That's kind of the nice thing about being able to have somebody else do it. But, you know, making that, you can help with that by making that connection with each child. And all children are different, depending on, you know, if they're 2 or 3 years old or, say, you know, 5 or 6 years old. But the younger they are, the harder it is to kind of instill that comfort and to overcome that fear. and really comes down to being able to make a, you know, a solid connection with that specific child. But you guys both, you know, hit the nail on the head with you know, it being safe and being fun, and a big part of that, you know, both fear and comfort is, you know, their needs have to be met, and before they come out to us, we really try and make sure that, you know, they've gone to the bathroom, they're dressed comfortably, they've had a snack, have they had their, is this lesson time, normally their nap time, and based on those factors, you know, we can tell a lot how it's going to go before it even goes.
You bring up, have they gone to the bathroom?
Totally.
And I'm just remembering being 5 years old and learning to ski at Arctic Valley and wearing this one-piece jumpsuit, right? And you have to go to the bathroom and you don't know how to get out of it.
Well, and you're right on. The other piece of this, too, is what we did with our boys is that, and I think I'd mentioned this to you earlier, is we had them practice getting their stuff on and off. We had them practice walking in those crazy boots. If you have never walked in a pair of ski boots and you're 5 years old, I mean, if you've ever watched these kids, you know, clunk around the day lodge, it's really complicated. Mm-hmm. And so the other thing we had them practice is putting on those skis by themselves and taking them off and practicing how to stand up, sit down. I mean, just, you know, your feet suddenly extend 2 extra feet in either direction. And for some kids, it's really intimidating.
Yeah. Although it seems like when kids are young, and you can weigh in on this, Garth, it seems like it's really much easier for them to adapt to skiing than if you're teaching an adult or you know, a teen, that they're somehow, that they quickly sort of figure out how those skis, you know, function on the snow. Do you find that young ones are pick it up pretty quickly?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, children compared to adults are continuously in that learning mode, whereas, you know, we get older and I don't know, more educated, I guess. You know, we tend to begin to withdraw from that learning process. So they're continually, every moment of every day, adapting to their environment, what they're doing in school or in recess, and so they can pick it up a lot quicker. You know, before you even put the skis on, though, you put the boots on, and pros and cons, if you want to keep them nearby you, you know, they act as a good anchor. But also then once you want to kind of get moving, then they also act as an anchor. So good challenge. But Aaron, like you said, having your children practice putting on the gear and even put the boots on, put the skis on. I remember both when I was a child at 4 years old and did the same thing with my daughter. We would, you know, start pulling out the ski gear in August or September and I'm walking around and then click in the skis and just shuffle on the carpet and turn around and turn back the other way and just, you know, beginning the familiarity with that. So that once the snow does fly, even if, you know, your 2-, 3-, 4-year-old child, you know, you're not even going to put skis on them, but you have boots on them and they're out on the snow, that's a success. That's the beginning of the skiing.
And building up that excitement factor, too, wow, we're going to get out there and really do this.
Yes.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. I'm talking with Garth McPhee, who's the director of the Mountain Learning Center at Alyeska Resort. And in the studio is Aaron Kirkland from akonthego.com. You can find lots of links to their organizations and other information, photos, and many other things that you'd be interested in on this topic at our website, alaskapublic.org. Just scroll down to Teaching Kids How to Downhill Ski. And in addition, we welcome you to get involved with the show by going to Facebook and looking at Outdoor Explorer, or by getting on the phone and calling us 550-8433 or 888-353-5752. And Garth, I just wanted to bring up the observation that things are a bit different now than they used to be in terms of the beginning, the very first stage. No longer do you have to learn how to grab onto a rope toe. Now there are ways of making it even easier to get started. Tell us about sort of that opening step and sort of what's involved in getting started.
Well, other than you know, magic carpet versus a rope toe, you know, with you know, the very first of getting started is to keep the pace appropriate. And as a parent out there, you know, as I am as well, getting your child started, it can often We can often transfer our expectations onto our child. We're not in line with what they are, you know, hoping or planning on getting out of the experience. And so for us as parents to make it more fun and to not be in any hurry to, you know, take them onto the jumps and trails that they really want to go to, you know, that's kind of the fruits of our labor is to get them to those fun trails. And there's quite a journey between that first time to where we can get them to enjoying the fun trails where they continue on.
Yeah, and I think another factor which was a challenge for me when I was teaching my first kid was he seemed to take to it really quickly, and then I kind of brought him up the mountain probably faster than I should have, and I had a pretty scary little incident when he took off sort of shushing down from the top of the tram at incredible speed, totally out of control.
Yeah, what they're all going to do that, though.
Yeah, and so and I had not done my homework. And how do you handle that, Garth? How do you make sure that the kid is skis within their capabilities when they're just learning?
Well, maybe make sure they're with the right parent there.
Ooh, <That's right. laughs> nicely said.
Oh, I'm joking. Yeah, you know, and that's a hard part. You know, it's you know, being pacing not only the journey of learning how to ski, but the terrain that we're learning on.
Right.
And, you know, I've kind of erred to the fault with my own child, and that, you know, my goal was to keep her on this first magic carpet here at Alyeska Resort until she was 12. Well, that obviously, you know, she wasn't, you know, going to play along with that. But as long as you can keep your child interested, engaged with the fun trails, with the toys and stuff on gentler terrain, the more confident, more comfortable, the more they're going to like it, and the less stress they'll put on your heart as a parent as well.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to mention what Garth just said and be okay with wherever your kid is. And if it means they're going to stay on the magic carpet till they're 12, that's okay. As long as they're having a good time.
As long as you can get your spouse to stay with them rather than you have to stay.
Well, right. You know, we'll talk about dividing and conquering later on in the show.
Right, right. Lynn posted on our Facebook page at Outdoor Explorer, sing a little song in your head as you ski and make turns. Use the music to time yourself. I like that.
Oh, we used to do that. Yeah.
Tom is on the line from Anchorage. Tom, did you have a comment?
Hey, good afternoon. I'm an expecting grandfather, and I'm looking forward with trepidation to losing my cool when it comes to that was ski. Because I'm sure I will. One of the things that I'd like to comment on and ask your guests to talk about is in addition to all the other great things they've already mentioned, is teaching great manners and etiquette on the slopes. I'm one of those guys that just dreads seeing a parking lot full of kids because I know I'm going to get knocked over and beat up by them as they're coming down the hill and without so much as that I'm sorry or excuse me or I'm behind you and so on and so forth. And I'd love to hear that comment, and I'll take those off the air.
Okay, thanks for calling. Aaron?
Actually, so... in addition to teaching skiing, I also worked a lot of lift lines. And so I kind of watched the evolution of snowboarding and where parents would dump kids off for the day and just kind of leave them. And you know, there was a lot of that, what is the proper etiquette on the slopes kind of thing. And we all know on the back of our lift ticket, there's that skier's rights and, you know, you can have those rights taken away. I think Tom has a great point that we need to also teach that these slopes are crowded, that people need to look out where they're going, and please, thank you, and hi, how's it going? And Garth, maybe you can speak to how Alyeska handles it, but one of the things we did is we practiced behaving in the lift line and how you behave on the chair and things like that, and it's pretty important, I think.
Yeah, and also in the downhill, when you're coming down the hill.
Oh, absolutely, where you stand and things like that.
How do you handle that, Garth?
Well, there is a you know, skier's responsibility code that our instructors are very educated on, and it is their job to, you know, educate their students, their children, adults alike, to you know, behave according to that responsibility code. And you know, with our patrol and our ski and snowboard school, we really have taken a proactive education approach versus you know, enforcement or discipline. And that really comes down to constant education on, like you're saying, where to stand, which athlete, which customer has the right of way. Is it
right.
The person can see in front of them or has eyes in the back of their head? I mean, it's a constant battle. And it starts, you know, from day one on the hill.
You know, and we would introduce our classes to the ski patrol as well. you know, let's go, you know, meet the ski patroller who's standing at the top. And, you know, and these people are not like police. They're there to make sure everybody's safe and things like that. And they're great skiers. So they're a lot of fun to follow down the mountain. But Garth is right, you know, starting from that very basic level, day one, that this is, if you're going to ski, it's a responsibility you have.
I want to get into something that I think is important, is that a lot of people might think that ski instruction is for beginners, but and I guess I'm not too far beyond a beginner, but I took a lesson last year, and man, I saw an amazing improvement in my skiing. And I'm sure that's true for older kids, too. Once they feel confident on skis, they can become much better skiers and even move towards competition, which is going on right now at Alyeska, as I understand it. So, Garth, how do you sort of figure out what level a kid is at or an adult is at and get them in the right group and how, you know, and then I guess at some point they'll move over to the club skiing and the racing, right?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, the way we kind of assess or determine a customer's level is, you know, just kind of a select or an interview process, which kind of sounds way too formal, but it starts off with our sales associates at our desk in our day lodge, and you know, they have a certain, you know, order of questions that they ask, and that's kind of the first line of information gathering. And then as they come out again, you know, the instructor will talk to them some more and talk to other folks at the other levels, and just to make sure that, you know, they're skiing with a group similar to their ability on the terrain that they want to be on. And, you know, whereas if in a private lesson, it really, you know, we still ask questions and assess that way. But ultimately in a private lesson, you're the only level because you're the only one there. But, no, we have quite a few schools that, charter schools that come and do intensives with us, where they will come for 2 weeks, and there's actually very few beginners, and they're mostly intermediate to advanced, and even some expert skiers that come, and they will get their PE credits for coming and training with us for 2 hours each day for 2 weeks, the Monday through Friday. And
lucky kids.
Yeah, and lucky us. I mean, our instructors just get so much time to work with students for multiple days and really, you know, put together great lesson plans and really see an outcome in making a good skier a better skier.
And you can always be a better skier.
Right. But in terms of just the casual person coming down, they don't need to make reservations or anything. They just go to the day lodge and walk up to the desk.
Correct. If for a group lesson, it's first come, first serve, 2 times a day. If you would like some information there, we do have a phone number for our sales desk. That's 907-754-2280. There is also information at alyeskaresort.com under the Mountain Learning Center page. But do feel free to give a call to speak to a human and find out any more information.
And you know what?
And I just want to mention that link to the Mountain Learning Center is on our website at alaskapublic.org. Go ahead, Erin.
You know, Garth, one of the great things that I found for the last couple of years is Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month that Alyeska has partnered with, because it's so encouraging for kids to, or adults, anybody really, to come and learn to ski. And Alyeska had some really great deals during the month of January for LSSM, and I think a lot of people took advantage of that.
Yeah, we've actually had a really good response to
that.
Yeah,
it's been super.
Like you said, that is a national push. You know, it's
yes.
Not Alyeska Resort, but we are jumping on the bandwagon for sure. And, yeah, we really just try and – we don't make much money on that, but we just try and infect as many people as we can. And
I think it's working.
It's working.
Yeah. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, and the studio with me is Erin Kirkland, who is the publisher of akonthego.com. And Garth McPhee is with me from Alyeska Resort in Girdwood. He's the director of the Mountain Learning Center. And we welcome you to get on the air with us. The phone number here in Anchorage is 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. Or electronically, go to Facebook and look for Outdoor Explorer. And now I'd like to welcome Eva to the line from Girdwood. Eva?
Oh, hi there. It's a nice sunny day here, and we are not outside right now, huh?
What's wrong? Yeah, what's the matter with us?
Yeah, I know. But so I'm calling. I'm a youth avalanche education coordinator with Alaska Avalanche School. And I just wanted to call into this program because I think it's a great theme for you today to talk about getting children outside, learning downhill skiing. But what that leads to is those kids getting really high skill set and then getting out to the mountains and potentially getting into all lots of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to join into conversation to promote the youth avalanche education as a part of the whole package for getting kids ready.
So do you offer classes, or how do you go about getting kids up to date on their avalanche skills?
Yeah, so we have actually partnered up with Alyeska Resort for the last two seasons, where we have evening classrooms set up, three hours of classroom basic instruction, and then we have a 1 day at the ski resort where we have more hands-on learning with the students. And the population that we offer this for is 12 to 18-year-olds. And most often our students are, they already know how to ski. It's almost hard for instructors to sometimes keep up with them. And then we'll just look at the terrain, have patrollers join us to talk about some safety matters. And then we learn the basic avalanche rescue skills. And we've offered these classes, we offer them a few times a year, and we have one class still on the schedule. It's on the classroom is the 28th of March in Anchorage at Alaska Avalanche School office, and the field day is on March 30th at Alyeska. So I think there is still room to sign up for that. And if that time doesn't work, we'll have more courses coming up next season.
Well, great. Ava, thanks for calling. And if you'll stay on the line, our producer can get information from you as to getting a link to your website on ours so listeners can get that information. So thanks for calling. You know, Eva brought something up, and I'd like to get both of you, Aaron and Garth, to address this, which is that if you have kids, they get a little bit better, pretty soon they may be skiing faster than you do. And then you don't know, are they really being safe, or are they being in control? Have you faced that, Aaron? How do you deal with that?
Yes, indeed, we have. But I think going back to what we talked about earlier and establishing that very good foundation with appropriate behavior, you know where your kids are ability-wise, and you've had this discussion. And what we used to do is have kind of chunks of time. We'd let our big guy go out and ski for a while. And my parents did the same thing. And, you know, I'd have to come back and check in. And, you know, I think you have to walk that fine line between independence and adventure and, you know, being the heavy parent and making sure that you know what your kids are up to.
Mm-hmm. I get, Garth, I'm imagining you don't get too many students who ski faster than you do.
Well, Aaron's spot on. You know, it really, skiing and snowboarding is just the medium. The mountain is just the venue. It really comes down to, you know, it's an extension of what goes on at home or at school. And, you know, by continuing to instill that in each of our own children, but also all of the children and students that we have here at the Mountain Learning Center, I think that the consistency and the persistence in that is really the hope.
Mm-hmm. Hey, here's something that Lori posted on our Facebook at Outdoor Explorer. She says, it's good to follow an instructor down that is skiing backwards so a student's eyes can follow them and they can see the student and offer tips. Do you guys do that, Garth? And I guess that leaves the broader question of how you communicate with the students while you're on your way down the mountain.
Yeah, there's various ways. That's one way. It definitely depends on the terrain that you're on. If you are on, you know, with a first-time skier on a very gradual 5-degree slope here next to our magic carpet, then absolutely, you can go back in a kind of a backwards snowplow, if you will, and continue to give feedback and communicate with the other skier. Is definitely an effective way. There's lots of terrain situations where I wouldn't recommend that, especially here at Alyeska Resort. But, yeah, that's a great way. You can also you know, have the instructor stand to the side of the run while you have your little practice cone or obstacle course, you know, providing objects for the students to turn around, and you can give them feedback and communicate with them as they go by you, they're coming at you, going by you, and as they ski away as well.
Well, great. You know, Garth McPhee, I want to thank you very much for being with us on the show today. Garth is the director of the Mountain Learning Center at Alyeska Resort. I'm going to let him get back outdoors and skiing. I don't think you have to give up any more time on the mountain today. And we'll be back with Aaron Kirkland in the second half of the show. But thanks for being with us, Garth.
Hey, great. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. And now it's time for the Outdoor Explorer calendar. On Saturday, March 30th, there's an ice fishing derby at Caribou Lake near Homer, hosted by the Snow Machine Club, SNOWMADS, S-N-O-W-M-A-D-S. The event is open to the public. For more information, visit snowmadsonline.org. Yeah, that's the URL. The 35th annual Alaska Heart Run is scheduled for Saturday, April 27th. Sprint, jog, or walk the 5K competitive and non-competitive runs, or the 3K Heart Light event. Registration for the Heart Run closes on April 20th at midnight. I'll definitely be there, and half of Anchorage will too. It's the kickoff of the running season, so Heart Run is coming right up. And learn how to shoot a bow and arrow. Saturday morning, starting May 26th through July 28th, enthusiasts from the Northwest Archers Club will be offering their expertise for free at the Kincaid Annex in Anchorage. Space and equipment available for use is limited. Contact the Kincaid Outdoor Center for details. And for links, for more info on all of these events and a lot more, go to alaskapublic.org and find our show. Finally, on Saturday, March 30th, the Arctic Bike Club is hosting a bike swap at the AT&T Sports Center Pavilion in Anchorage from 12:30 to 3. To tell us a little more about it, we have Arctic Bike Club board member and bike swap organizer, Christopher Souser. Thanks for being with us, Christopher. I'm sorry, we've lost Christopher, so we will get him back in just a minute. So we will be back to talk more about kids, outdoors activities, and the bike swap in just a minute, right after this break. All right, we're back, and Christopher Souser is here from the Arctic Bike Club, which is having a bike swap at the AT&T Sports Center Pavilion in Anchorage coming up on Saturday the 30th. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks.
Yeah. So tell me, what is a bike swap? I guess I've heard of ski swaps, where you show up with your old skis and you kind of see who else has got what, and you buy, sell, trade skis. Same deal with bikes?
It is pretty much very similar to for bicycles. It's run a little differently than the West High Bike Swap, where they do a check-in and check-out. This is kind of more of an open forum, kind of a flea market style, where everybody can kind of just show up, set up, and start bargaining.
I see. So if you've got a shed full of old bikes, just bring them out and just, like, sell them for whatever you can get, huh?
That's pretty much it, yes. And it's not just limited to just bikes themselves. It's bike parts. There's a lot of bike-related gear that is actually exchanged at the swap.
Okay. Is there any fee required for coming out?
No, it's absolutely free. It's done as a community service, and also as kind of something to kick off the cycling season, make people aware that, you know, even though it's not clear roads out yet, that, you know, it's time to bike.
Yeah. So do people show up with any high-end gear, or is it mostly the older stuff?
You see stuff that is, you see last season, you even see some stuff from this season, as well as older stuff, but it tends to range in the last couple of years mostly, and there's a wide variety. You really never know what people will show up with, if they're going to show up with a $20 bike or they're going to show up with a multi-$1,000 bike.
Yeah, so it sounds like a great opportunity to find some bargains on a new bike.
Definitely.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the Arctic Bike Club. Are you oriented toward road biking, mountain biking, both?
I'm kind of mostly oriented towards mountain biking personally, but the club itself is all over the spectrum. We have a road division, we have a mountain division, we have a cyclocross cross division, and then we have a recreation division. The other three divisions do races and organized events, whereas the recreation division does loosely organized recreational rides, open to really anyone. There's no fee to them, and it's just to get people out and riding.
I got you. Okay, great. And if folks want to learn more about the club, the URL is arcticbikeclub.com, and you can find a link to it on our website at alaskapublic.org. And the event is the bike swap, which is coming up at the AT&T Sports Center Pavilion in Anchorage from, and it's going to be on the Saturday the 30th. So that's a week from Saturday, 12:30 to 3.
That's great.
Well, thanks very much for being with us, Christopher.
Okay, thank you.
All right. So stay tuned with us for the second half of the show. We'll be continuing to talk about teaching your kids how to ski and all the other great outdoor skills you want them to have when Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer from KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 7 p.m. on FM 91.1. If you're listening in the evening, it is a recorded rebroadcast and will not be taking phone calls. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime, download podcasts, and see what's coming up on future programs at alaskapublic.org.
We're back. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, and we're talking about kids today, specifically teaching them to ski. And now in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about teaching them how to do all the other stuff that, you know, makes being an Alaskan being an Alaskan. We live in a wonderland of outdoor activities, and we want our kids to know how to do it, be safe, and enjoy it. And so I've Erin Kirkland remains with me. She's the publisher of akonthego.com. which specializes in family travel. Erin's got a lot of experience as a journalist and as a mom and as a broadcaster. And now joining us is Scott Fritz, who teaches at Trailside Discovery Camp and has done a lot of stuff with working with kids and getting them into the outdoors. Scott, thanks for being with us.
Hey now, thanks for having me. I really like being here.
All right, great. And we'd love to hear from you. Questions, comments, experiences, tips for other parents. The number is 550-8433. That's within Anchorage, 550-8433. From outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. That's the toll-free number. To reach us electronically, go to Facebook and find our page at Outdoor Explorer and post. And then I'll be able to see those comments and put them on the air, and we can also... You know, there are other listeners can see them and we can get some discussion going there. Trailside is a camp that does away trips, and you start with kids who may or may not have any real skills in what you're doing. And by the end of the week, you want to be able to mountain bike or sea kayak or do whatever it is you want them to do. And that's always seemed to me like that's a heck of a challenge.
You know, it's a lofty goal. And I find, in my experience, a lot of these kids have been doing trailside trips full summer, 12 weeks, for years and years and years. So a lot of these kids, they do have these skills. But we, as you said, we also have some children that have never gone camping or anything in their life. And I think the best, one of the really effective ways to go about giving them those experiences and those successes, I like to scaffold things. Stress, you know, the basic outdoor skills before you even get to, say, the kayaking. And once you have a basis of how to stay warm and dry in camp and you know how to set those things up, then you can really explore a particular adventure skill. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's where I like to start and adjust for those who can already do those things. And fantastic. They get a chance to teach. And once everyone's up to speed on some level, let's go practice whatever it is we're there to do. Because on a good day, if it's sunny like today, we got all the time in the world. If they want to practice their paddling or their bike repair skills, we can do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you're dealing also with kids with different attitudes, different energy levels, different sort of ways of dealing with adults, and then you're taking a bunch of them and putting them in sea kayaks and putting them in the ocean. That sounds terrifying.
Isn't it something? It's absolutely wild.
How do you make that work? How do you make sure everybody's paying attention and being safe?
You know, paying attention is the easy part. And I think being safe is pretty, too. You can rest assured when these children are in a kayak, they're pretty sharp. They're with it. They're paying attention to what's around them. They feel compelled to be with it. And, you know, I even think being safe is pretty easy because for kayaking, at least, the ocean's going to tell us whether or not we should be going out and paddling anyway. And so if the ocean's telling us to stay at camp, let's make some hot drinks and have some dinner and let's go paddling when the paddling is much more safe. And I think that'd be a more enjoyable experience.
Well, and that's a good point, is that when you're challenging kids and they're doing something that is exciting, challenging, maybe a tiny bit scary, they'll actually pay attention to the parents and the adults, right?
They sure will.
You know, and a Trailside Discovery, because my youngest has gone for a couple of years, and actually Scott's a great guy.
Thank you.
The great thing about Trailside Discovery is that they allow kids to rise to the challenge that we know they can meet. And as parents, you know, and Charles, I'm sure you've had those moments where are they ready to do this? I'm not really sure. That part is kind of taken away at Trailside and camps like that, where these adventure experiences allow kids to really do these things that they know somewhere in there that they can do. And it's a great thing to watch between Monday and Friday, how these kids have become independent and self-assured and learn all these great skills.
I've seen that myself. And I want to talk to you about that, Aaron, too, is that the different chemistry that takes place when the parent is present and when the parent is absent.
Absolutely.
You know, the Junior Nordic program teaches hundreds and hundreds of kids to ski every winter, and they look for parent volunteers to ski with the groups, but they have a specific rule that you cannot ski with your own kid's group.
Absolutely.
And I've seen this coaching there at times when the parent is there, the kid will just flop on the ground and say, I don't want to do it. But when the parent is gone, they take off. And I've always... It's an interesting thing to think about as a parent, how you impact your kid that way.
Absolutely. And I'm thinking back to the soccer teams I've coached with for my kids and teaching skiing and biking, anything. I think it is beneficial sometimes to step back, let somebody else take that in, because as we talked about at the beginning of the show, you're removing that emotional attachment that you've already got with your kid, and kids are not dumb. They know where your trigger point is going to be.
Right.
And, you know, I think if we want this experience, whatever it is, to be a fantastic one, sometimes, not all the time, sometimes, it behooves everybody to just let them go learn it, and then you can do that sport or activity together and have a great time. And again, that's like with skiing at Alyeska, going to Trailside, you know, let Scott teach my kid how to sea kayak. And then, gosh, the next time we go out, you know, we can all go together and have a super time.
Well, one of the great things about my kids going to Trailside is when they've come back and they are teaching me stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so this is what this plan is. And that's fun.
That's absolutely the stuff right there.
Yeah.
That's the stuff.
And, you know, with kayaking, you know, I have kayakophobia. And in fact, I'm working on an article about it. It just near-death experience in a kayak. And you know, Owen at 8, last summer, he went out kayaking. We were on a small ship cruise. And he was the one that was like, oh, no, you can do this. You can do this. And it's such an empowering moment for a kid when they can show the adult how to do something or how to feel comfortable with something. So
it's really the family outdoor thing is, to me, is all about building teamwork within your family.
Yes.
And your kids becoming respecting themselves and respecting their role in the family, so they're not just a consumer, but they're actually part of the team.
Yeah.
And
yes.
I know that must be a lot of what you work with at Trailside in terms of putting groups together that are going on outings. Everybody's got to pull their weight, right, Scott?
Everyone's got to pull their weight. I will say that in particularly demanding situations, say if we're in Blackstone Bay and it is just pouring rain and we need to get shelters up pretty quick, the guides, they might take a lead on that to make sure everything gets done. But unless it's a situation where we need to get a shelter up pretty quickly, there's absolutely no reason why we couldn't have the two guides split the groups up and take all the time the kids need to learn to put up that tent.
Right. Because
they have the time, they have the practice. And I feel like there's a certain sense of self-efficacy that I've come to see in these children. I think you were talking about that just a second, Aaron. Kind of almost doesn't matter what the challenge is. They might grow to feel, in general, yes, I can do that. I've done all these things. Of course I can do that. And I think that's one of the more powerful things that I've experienced professionally working at Trailside, that sense in myself and seeing it in the campers and even my my coworkers.
And that's what, part of what we get out of putting our kids in the outdoors is building that confidence.
Yeah.
So give me some of the basics in terms of, we started on kayaking, may as well talk about that. Step by step, how do you get a kid to learn how to do that and be successful and be safe?
Happy to do so. Before we even leave town, we take our kids over to Goose Lake, have them flip their kayaks so they can feel what that's like to be in kind of warm water. And they just, you know, very low consequence in Goose Lake. They can walk the thing out. But before we do any, before we and the kids, we leave, kind of like I said before, depending on the age group, like a Seward kayak trip for the 8 and 9 year olds, we probably spend a lot of our time going over how to stay warm and dry in a temperate rainforest, go over personal hygiene and how to manage your stuff. And those are all those things need to be addressed and just learned before you can delve into the kayaking the most. So we'll start with those kind of just basic skills that a lot of kids have, but some kids don't. And we'll also spend a day in Goose Lake learning the kind of the popular ways to paddle. I have an analogy. I like to, I'm going to make a motion. The listeners can't see it. I'm sorry.
We'll describe it for you.
I like to check my watch as I'm paddling, using my hips to kind of paddle instead of the arms. Make a motion like I'm checking my watch on both sides.
Okay, everybody, practice.
Like you're punching the boat. I realize that doesn't translate. But that's one of the pedagogies that we use.
So give them those proper technique skills.
Give them proper techniques and some language they understand in a low consequence environment.
There's a huge benefit to that when you get older and you haven't learned the wrong way.
Yeah.
Very, you know, Charles, that's a great point too. When you're learning to do anything and or maybe when you jump in as an adult and you think you can, I can figure this out, you know, and having the basic skills that you've learned as a kid or correctly, no matter what age you are, I think serves you very, very well, and especially a situation like kayaking.
Yeah, there's some benefit for taking lessons in any kind of skill like this to sort of get it right the first time. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about teaching kids outdoor activities, skiing, and then we're also getting into kayaking and other things and talking a lot about attitudinal stuff and just good parenting, really. That's a lot of what it's all about. In the studio is Aaron Kirkland, who is the publisher of akonthego.com. It is a family-oriented travel site about Alaska. And Scott Fritz, who teaches kids at Trailside Discovery Camp. And you can find Trailside's link on our website as well, along with Aaron's at alaskapublic.org. Get on the air with us if you have questions or tips for other parents. The phone number here is 550-8433. And if you're out of town, it's 888-353-5752. And comments also come in on Facebook at Outdoor Explorer. And Stuart posted something on Facebook. This is about skiing. He says, lean forward. It's counterintuitive, but it's a key to having control. There's nothing to fear but fear itself.
You know what? That used to make me crazy when, great point, Stuart, because my dad would say, lean forward, and no.
You want me to do what?
No.
See where we are right now?
But it's that kind of, if you find a skilled instructor who's going to tell you, not necessarily the mechanics behind that, but just to do it, we always tell kids you're squishing a bug with your toe, and you've always got to feel like you're doing that.
There's a few little basics that if somebody tells you, like getting that athletic posture with the knees bent and a little bit forward, and then, you know, have your hands like you're holding a tray.
Yes, why I'd have the Happy Meal. We're holding the Happy Meal. That's how we do it. It's those kind of things that really help.
Yeah. So, one thing that I wanted to emphasize, and this is again in the parenting part of this, and I think both of you can address it, is how to keep it fun. And I noticed when my first son was just learning to hike with us that we would tend to go until he was getting tired, and then we would turn around, and then by the time we got home, he was miserable because we just made him go twice as far as he was able to go. So we started looking at like how far was his personal best, and then we might go that far or maybe a little bit farther, but we would try to really limit the distance we went so that we didn't wipe out his energy level. And Aaron, I'm sure you probably have some tips. How do you keep it fun?
You know, we do think my dad was a forester, and so you know, I grew up hiking everywhere. So he would do things like let's see who can find the rock that looks like a heart or whatever.
And songs, you know, are great.
A lot
too.
Of tree ID. We did a lot of that, and you know, maybe that scarred me. But you know, you have to look at things the way kids do, and kids don't see the destination so much as they see where they are at this very moment. So I think for you and your family to look at, you know, how far our kids went this last trip, and let's go maybe 10 minutes beyond that, which doesn't sound like much to us as adults, but for a kid, 10 minutes is a long time.
Especially if they're carrying a pack.
Or, you know, and then you look at what time of day you went. Did you go in the afternoon when they've had a busy day? Did you go first thing in the morning? Are you going to, you know, lunch, of course, is the most important part. Mm-hmm. And my dad and mom would also, you know, fill their pockets with candy. You know, bribery is perfectly okay when you're hiking. Let's go to that
calories.
Stump over there and sit down and take 10-minute break. And
yeah,
they were really,
really
good
about
that.
The point about food, I learned that in family travels, is that keeping regular meal times is the most important thing.
And sticking to whatever, and your regular routine in every respect.
Regular kind of food,
as much as you can. And that's one of the things that is tough for us as a family who travels quite extensively, especially in Alaska, where you've got these many and varied, you know, diets and cultures and things, you know, and our kids are really picky eaters. So we take a lot of stuff with us. But sticking to your routine, sticking to what is familiar to your kids, while you may want to expose them to new things, kids just don't always operate like that.
Don't get your kids too hungry or too tired.
Amen.
Scott, you obviously are dealing with kids of various ability levels, and you got to, and also various abilities to stay happy. How do you keep them happy and keep them within their not going over their limits in terms of getting too tired and so forth?
Well, as far as keeping the kids happy is concerned, I have a kind of a different approach than these parents. I usually stop whatever it is we're doing when they're really, really enjoying it. Mm-hmm. So that way they don't have time to get bored or sick of it. And they really enjoyed it last time. I want to do that again. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I try to do I think that's my go-to. To keep, if things are going really, really well, people are liking it. Unfortunately, it's probably time to put that away for now and find something else that people really, really like.
I would so much rather have them whine about having to go back early because they're having fun than having them whine because they're exhausted. And if you've ever heard the two, one is much more pleasant to deal with than the other.
One is exactly what we're trying to get from them.
We
want them to enjoy it. And, you know, there have been times where I'm recalling a time last summer. I was with a great group of kids. We were going up Flat Top. And one of the young ladies gave everything she had. She didn't get very far, but her effort was so incredibly valiant. And that situation, she just simply wasn't going to get to the top. So, you know, the group wasn't going to get to the top. And that was fine because we got to spend a great, we reframed the whole process. Instead of we didn't get to the top, look what we did get to do. Look where we get to spend a day eating lunch on the Alpine Tundra. In a place that most people don't really get to see unless they're from here.
Positive feedback.
Positive feedback, man.
Yeah. As a group.
As a group. That's really important that it comes from the group.
And Ron is calling from Anchorage. He has something to say about kids' attitude. Ron?
Hi. This is playing right into what I had in mind, and that is that keeping kids' attitude keeping them interested in outdoor activities is sometimes a real problem as they go from, especially young girls to young women, they get influenced by their peers. They run across distractions from boys and fashion and things they see in the media. So that's just something to keep in mind, that the wonderful ideas that have been presented here today need to be backed up with a long-range perspective to keep them in that healthy, active lifestyle.
That's a really good point, Ron. And I've run into this with my daughters and with their friends, is that they hit a it's right around 11 to 13 where they decide if they're going to be active young women or sedentary young women.
Yes.
And it's very easy for girls who are looking at very much at how other people see them, if they're not super good at something, to quit. And I don't know, it sounds like you might have some experience in that area, Ron.
Well, I've been lucky that I haven't had kids that quit, but I've been around a lot of kids going through that stage. And I think that one of the things that has helped so much are some of the programs that are available in town. Junior Nordic, Fast and Female, something starting up for young girls, and some of those type of things where the kids get to learn how much fun it can be to be active. They can encounter some other kids that have the same kind of interest that they do, and that helps get them through and come to the realization that they don't have to quit one thing to start up another. They can be active and still get into all these other issues that they encounter.
That's great. Well, thanks for the call, Ron. And I want to throw that out to my guests. I think that one of the things I've noticed in this issue of, and it may be true a little bit with boys, but it's really true with girls in that age group, is that competition affects them very differently.
Yes.
For some, they'll excel and they'll go on to be Keegan Randall. And for some, if they have to compete, they're really going to not want to do it anymore. And so having non-competitive activities is really important. And
Yeah, and I totally agree with what Ron said and what you're saying, Charles. And even though I don't have daughters, I mean, you know, I've definitely worked with young ladies on a whole bunch of different levels with respect to outdoor activities. And I think having the positive adult role model or older teen role model, because, sometimes someone who's just 4 or 5 years or older than you can be the person you look up to most. And if you see that, and Keegan Randall has probably been one of the best role models for young ladies because she's so enthusiastic and there is no sense of I'm the best and things like that. It's she's sending out the message that every young lady can be the best she can be, and that's perfectly okay. And the other thing with girls is that, you know, they become so into what their bodies look like, and as their bodies change, they're very awkward, and you know, kids, when they hit those tween teen years, everybody looks a little bit different. And with respect to outdoor activities that are non-competitive, you know, girls especially can find their comfortable spot. Sea kayaking is an excellent example because it doesn't matter what you look like. Everybody, when you're sitting in that little boat, kind of looks the same. And hiking is another one. Cross-country running is another one. But Anchorage, I found, is a really supportive place to be a kid. You know, we haven't lived here our entire life like you have, but I'd be interested in what you think. But, you know, I've really found it to be a very positive place to grow up.
Mm-hmm. Scott, I want to turn to you about this issue about, I guess it's the tween years and gender as well. I mean, as I think about it, there's plenty of boys who kind of want to drop out of outdoor activity at that age too. When you're leading groups, how do you keep sort of those things positive in terms of the kids' interactions and keeping them encouraging each other and all that?
Primarily, I find in Trailside, the people that are there, they're there because they want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I guess I'm lucky in that most every camper that I've had in my experience was pumped to be there. Their parents wanted them to be there. And that feeds that enthusiasm, taking into account the occasional emotional frustration, which mm-hmm. is appropriate and acceptable. I kind of get a feed off of that energy, too.
Yeah.
And that... my boss Tom likes to buy me coffee, so he can give me that extra woohoo uh-huh. to get everyone kind of motivated.
Do you ever see any kind of negative group dynamics develop? Kids, middle school age kids don't always treat each other well. And how do you deal with that when that takes place?
I like to deal with that before it happens. You know, preemptive action on the first day of camp. I like to do a group contract. Talk about expedition behavior, and set up kind of at least I strive to set up a safe, emotionally safe space within our group where none of that's going to happen. And when it does happen, sometimes it does. There's, we have a verbal warning. That's not appropriate. Please don't do that. The next step is we call mandatory meditation at camp. And that doesn't. Some of the older kids don't. They don't buy that. But mm-hmm. you got to get them away from the group. And if it does a third time, if it's this person on that day can't quite make the decisions to be a positive group member. We give them a chance to hang out with the camp director and think about what's going on for them. I love giving as many chances as possible to be a positive participant. But some days it's just not going to happen. And after the three opportunities to please change your behavior, we'll give you a chance to go be negative somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, I'm just thinking how nice it would be to have a camp director. So as a parent, you could say, you're out of here.
But
you have to stay with them all the time.
I know, mandatory meditation. I am so going to use that.
I really wish they would give that to counselors.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'd like to be able to take your own kid and send them to the camp director, but they have to stay with you.
You know, all this talk, you know, kind of leans into the, you know, how do you know when your kids have had enough?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've taken your kids on some pretty hardy adventures, and as have we. And I think it's so important to know as a parent when you're kind of going to be done for the day, no mm-hmm. matter what it is. If you're done driving, if you're done hiking, if you're done, you know, doing all this other stuff.
If you have the attitude of you got to make it to the top, or you're a goal-oriented person, you're probably
yes.
not going to do that well with leading kids.
Yes. Yeah. Now, some kids, given, you know, are that way and are that focused.
It needs to come from the kid, though.
But it totally needs to be kid-driven. And, you know, we vacation with the expectation that our son is going to let us know when we've seen one too many museums or hiked one too many miles.
And they sure will, guaranteed.
They will. Yeah.
Pretty quickly.
And we haven't talked too much about the aspect of fairness among the parents, right? You gotta, especially if you're on like a wilderness trip,
right?
You gotta break it up so that each of you gets a little time off and you're fair about how you divide
yes.
your kid time.
Yes, absolutely. And my husband and I do a fairly admirable job of that. But, you know, we've had a lot of opportunities to do that. And families who maybe don't go on, you know, extended period of time, you know, trips, it can be a little challenging. But we just kind of talk ahead of time and say, okay, what are the activities that you, husband or, you know, wife, spouse, what do you want to do on this vacation? And if, you know, if he wants to go kayaking on the 5-hour paddle, then by golly, we're going to make sure that he has that opportunity to mm-hmm. do that. And
and I think that, and we're just about out of time, but it seems like the group dynamics are taking your kids, friends along,
yes.
creating a carpool, having just more than just you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's fun
big.
For everybody.
It's way more fun when you have buddies.
Yeah, they're going to, like, if you're at Alyeska, we were talking about that earlier, if their friend's there, your kids are going to ski like dynamite,
you
right?
You bet. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank both of you for being here. This has been a really fun discussion and a valuable one for me as a parent to share these kinds of conversations. The show today is Outdoor Explorer. We've had Erin Kirkland in the studio. She's a publisher of akonthego.com, which serves family travel in Alaska, and she's a publisher, and you can find out lots more about her by finding her link on our website at alaskapublic.org. Thanks for being with us, Aaron.
Thanks a lot.
And Scott Fritz is in the studio with me. He's worked with Trailside Discovery Camp and an expert on teaching kids. Scott, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can find the Trailside link on our website as well. Garth McPhee was with us earlier. He's with the Mountain Learning Center at Alyeska Resort. Nick and we talked a little bit about the bike swap that's coming up. Christopher Souser from the Arctic Bike Club. Next week on Outdoor Explorer, group-led activities. Today, there are many opportunities to meet up with people interested in the same activities as you. Tune in next week at 2 here on KSKA Anchorage.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to alaskapublic.org.